This is Scammapalooza. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au. And don't forget that the Melbourne Magic Festival is on from the 3rd of July for 2 weeks at the Northcote Town Hall. I'm performing in two shows, The Confidence Artist, which is basically a greatest hits of all my favourite scams and cons from throughout the years, and also The Best of the Magic Fest, which is on every night at 9:30. And it's me hanging out with my favorite magicians doing what we love best, magic. I'd really love to see you all there. Check out my website for more information. Anyway, on with the show. What is the difference between a con artist and a magician? Well, great magician tells you they're going to lie to you. They admit it outright, and then they fool you anyway. But a great con artist will suck you in and leave you refusing to believe you were ever deceived. So what then about mentalism? That branch of magic that brings to life psychic phenomena like telepathy or psychokinesis, or that takes extraordinary psychological claims like those found in neuro-linguistic programming and makes them seem believable, even though there's not a lot of scientific evidence to suggest that they are. These magicians are often so believable that audiences are left truly believing that the entertainer has abilities that they simply do not have, and often do not even exist. So, are they con artists? Is it ethical to lie to an audience in this way? Or is it just show business? On this episode of Scammapalooza, I'm joined by magician and comedian John Archer as we seek to get inside the mind of the mind readers.
It's the middle of the night where you are. It is first thing in the morning where I am here in Australia.
It is 10 past midnight here.
10 past midnight. It is 10 past 9 in the morning. So you're drifting off to sleep and I am barely out of bed. So I think between the two of us, we are one functional human being. But we're going to get through this.
Well, I don't even know if we're one functional human being. Are we?
Fair enough.
We might be one human being, but whether or not we're functioning, we're going to find out.
We'll know by the end of this whether we are or we aren't. Fair enough. So we're going to talk about mentalism today, which is a subgenre of magic. You are known as a mentalist. Is that something you call yourself?
No.
Well, thank you very much for the call and I'll see you later.
No, I'll tell you what it is. I don't really call myself, I suppose if I get referred, it depends who's talking about me, really. Some people, lay people sometimes just refer to me as a comedian. Sometimes they refer to me a comedy magician. I don't think lay people really know exactly what a mentalist is. So it's more a term that is used by magicians to categorize what I do, I suppose, because most, not everything, but most of what I do falls into that mentalism category. But I don't really refer myself as a mentalist, and I don't know why. I mean, I get asked to do things like mentalist conventions, you know, and I go along and do them. But, I just don't really like to box myself specifically because I find it all a bit weird anyway. I mean, we're sort of doing the same thing. It's just what we call it. It's a strange... I mean, you can do a mentalist effect and make it seem like magic, and you do a magic effect and make it seem like mentalism, and it's the same effect. You know what I mean? So
yeah. What do you?
I'm not sure what defines a mentalist.
Yeah.
Is it somebody who, is it somebody who appears to have real mental powers, to telepathy, etc.? In which case, I'm definitely not a mentalist. Is it someone who presents effects that have something to do with thoughts and concepts, then, yeah, I suppose I am a mentalist. But I don't really know what the true definition is.
Yeah. I guess generally speaking, though, you could argue that a mentalist is anyone who focuses their performances on the magic of the mind. So mind reading, predicting the future, telekinesis, bending things with the power of your mind, memory effects, demonstrating having extraordinary memory.
I suppose in that way it could be, although I never really present it as real either. I never really try and make anybody think what I'm doing is remotely real. So in some ways it's like, well, am I really doing that anyway? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this is okay. So we say someone like Derren Brown, the British mentalist magician. He, and most of what he does is mentalism, and he presents it, and people believe that it's real. But then someone like David Copperfield, he may do some mind reading type tricks, but everybody knows that he's a magician, and it's that kind of the categorization. So,
but you know what? I think that might be more in magicians' heads than lay people's heads.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, certainly some people, if you ask them what they thought of Derren, would say he's a mind reader. But I think some people would still refer to him as a magician.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in the later days now, maybe not in the early days when he presented himself slightly more real, I think, than he does now. But I'm not sure whether the lay public have such clear-cut, you know, guidelines of what we are and we aren't.
That is true. I've seen
we do for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm not
sure. Yeah, I think you're right. That lay people often aren't. They don't care about the specifics of what you call yourself. My good friend Simon Coronel, he has a thing where he hates being called a magician. I don't know what his thoughts are. I haven't spoken about it recently.
I've seen his act. I can understand that.
That's awful.
Does he listen? He's bound to listen.
No, he will. I'll let him know. He says
I'm out of the castle in August. That's all my drinks cancelled now.
Yeah, you're out. You're out. He's one of those guys who says, "Oh, I don't like to be called a magician." And then, you know, I consider myself, I think he might have gone with illusionist or something. I can't remember. But like you said, the audience just go, "Oh, it's a magician. It's a magic man." And their level of how much they believe in what you do is a lot to do with the baggage they bring to the show with them. You know, there are people who are convinced that David Copperfield, you know, a man who made a living jumping in and out of boxes and flying and, you know, wearing, you know, incredibly flamboyant outfits and dancing around with showgirls. There are people who honestly believe that he is a, you know, has sold his soul to the devil in order to perform what he does.
Yeah.
And likewise, there are people who, you know, will see the most convincing mentalism act and will just go, "Oh, look at the magic man. I wish my 5-year-old was here because he loves magic tricks." You know, that type of thing. Yeah. There is, however, that's often used as an excuse by mentalists who try to, because, you know, your act, you don't try to make the audience believe that you really have powers, and it doesn't seem to be something that you really think very much about as a performer. You know, you want your magic to be believable, but you certainly don't want it to
I don't necessarily want it to be believable. I want it to be fooling, and I want it to be interesting and entertaining. I don't necessarily want it to be believable, as in they believe I've actually done what I've actually done. I'm quite happy for them to accept that what I've done is a trick, and I'm doing something that's neat and cool, and I can fool them with it. But I'm certainly not interested in them in any way thinking I'm doing what I'm doing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Whereas it seems like a large chunk of the people who specifically refer to themselves as mentalists are keen to create the most believable illusion they possibly can. You know, they would not, you know, there are guys who will not pick up a deck of cards because the audience might associate it with a magic trick, and their goal is to have everyone in the audience believing that they have whatever ability it is that they're claiming.
I'm a little bit uncomfortable with that, to be honest.
Yeah,
with that sort of approach. Because I think as soon as we start doing that, we're not that far off a spiritualist or a fake medium.
Yeah.
We're pretty much doing the same thing. I mean, we learned most of our techniques have come from that world, you know, sort of with billets and various things that have transferred across from the fake mediums. We've taken them up and used them for entertainment purposes. And then all of a sudden, instead of saying we can read somebody's mind with them, we can make all of the claims, which are no better. You know, I mean, all right, you know, claiming you can speak to somebody's dead relative is probably as bad as you can get as a claim. But claiming that, you know, you can look at the way somebody's combed their hair and tell what card they've picked, if they believe that and you set it up as real, then you're creating a false world for them in just the same way.
What do you think of the argument, though, that yes, it does create a false world, and yes, people are more likely to believe in those things, but that's in the context of a show. People are walking in, they're sitting down, they're watching a show, and then the show finishes, and then they leave the show. And what they do with what they see in that show is entirely up to them. And the performer is not, you know, necessarily talking to dead relatives or, you know, removing curses or asking for more money. They're simply saying, if you come, I'll put on an incredible show. And they do put on an incredible show. Therefore, there's no harm done. That's the argument that I get a lot.
Yeah, I haven't got a problem with that. But I think as soon as they start making claims that how they do it using a fake method, and I must admit I'm guilty of that. I've done it now and again. Whenever I do it, I try and make it so comedic that it's obviously that's not what I'm doing. Mm. You know, so I'll look at somebody and say, "You were a lot smaller when you were a child. You know, your feet. You know, just silly things like that that are sort of fake methods along those lines." But I would never really want them to think that, you know, I can tell what they do for a living from, you know, their breakfast cereal bowl or whatever, and you do get some that do that, and I know it's a show, but you know, fake mediums sort of claim that what they're doing is a show, but what they're doing is real within that show. So if you go and watch a movie, and at the beginning of the movie it says, "This is a true story," you know, everything you see really happened, and yet, you know, you go away and find out the film wasn't a true story, and they've just put that at the front of the film for effect. Like, I suppose, Blair Witch to a certain extent, although, I mean, that was more of a publicity thing. It was always going to come out that it wasn't. But I think it's just a bit of a dodgy path to try and present fake information and get people. You know, I mean, Darren, when he first started, his original claims was that it was all mind magic and he was manipulating the mind, and a lot on NLP and other such things.
That's neuro-linguistic programming, yeah?
Yeah, sorry, neuro-linguistic. I can't say that. NLP is much easier.
NLP, yeah.
But yeah, and he very quickly backed off that because he'd have NLP practitioners sort of going, "Well, wow, we didn't know this was possible," and, you know, investigating it and wanting to talk to me and find out more about it. And all of a sudden, you know, there's this science that is so much greater than it actually is being created.
I guess that's the thing that...
I'm a little bit torn with it. It's not a black and white issue for me. It is grey, but I do feel uncomfortable about people who use... You know, they'll sometimes use a disclaimer, but it's actually it's a claimer in the disguise of a disclaimer. So they'll say, you know, "Everything I do is done through," and then they'll name a few things which are very vaguely correct, perhaps. But really what they're doing is claiming to be using those techniques when actually maybe they're not, you know.
Yeah, the one that you get a lot is that "Everything I'm doing, it's related, it's, you know, I have no psychic powers. Instead, I'm using... you know, psychology and perception and, you know, influence and sleight of hand and magic." But the sort of "and magic" is always kind of mumbled at the end. And in reality, 99% of it is trickery, is, you know, like trapdoors and mirrors and smoke.
Exactly.
And the psychology is, you know, the choosing a person who's not going to give you trouble on stage, or... you know, asking leading questions to get a funny answer, or, you know, like relying on body language to tell whether the person's comfortable with the situation. But they are add-ons, the icing on the cake, as opposed to the core method. I mean, the thing about, like, with magic in general is that magic has always sort of strived to be real. And it's just that you know, we in our modern age, we're much more cynical about the claims that people make. And so the magicians have to evolve what they're doing. You know, people will no longer believe that you can really saw someone in half and put them back together again. And so instead, you know, we make these mental claims instead. Is it just evolving what magic has already done? Or do you think that we are getting more devious and more dishonest in the way in which we present this type of performance?
I think we're getting a little bit more dishonest. I mean, what makes magicians different from, you know, psychics and fraudsters and things is the one thing that what we claim to do is an honest deception.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of mentalists, that honest deception is gone because they actually, you know, are deceiving them with, you know, just by claiming it's done in a slightly different way. So what's the difference between, you know, using a magic technique to tell somebody you're contacting the dead and using a magic technique to tell people that you have an amazing ability to, you know, touch people's foreheads and hear thoughts? I mean we're still, I know one is uglier than the other, and certainly preying on unfortunate people in a bigger way, but we're still duping the audience. Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, I love what Penn talks a lot about this, Penn and Teller, and I sort of agree with them. The trick should be enough. It should be enough that I'm going to do a cool trick for you. I'm going to do something, and you won't know how it's done, and it'll fool you, and you'll be puzzled by it, and you'll be entertained by it. That should be enough. But there's some mentalists, and I don't know what it is. It's just almost that thing of wanting to be real, wanting to be Superman, wanting people to think that you're. I don't know whether, you know, I don't get it really, why you would want somebody to think you've got special powers. You know, your special power is that you've trained for years to do magic tricks. You've trained for years to do things that will, you know, will mess with the heads and think, well, it looks like mind reading, but when you start claiming that it either is, or you start claiming that it's some other technique, then you sort of, it just feels like an unfair game to me.
I think it was at Magic Live, which is a magic convention, I guess. Is that,
I'm doing it in August. Oh, come along and see me.
It is a long way to go just to see you. Is there anyone else? I would love to go. They do these little, there's a little video, the little 7-minute lectures for magicians, and they tended to be more on theory than this was Magic Live. Anyway, they did these little 7-minute lectures, and one of the guys, whose name I've completely forgotten, made a good point that when a mentalist tries to prove that what they're doing is real, it stops being a show and starts being a scientific experiment. Experiment, like, one, it's a fraudulent scientific experiment, but secondly, a scientific experiment is not an enjoyable thing to watch for an audience. And if you start focusing on proving things and you know, creating what look like test conditions and really trying to create this incredibly realistic situation, you can lose the ability to entertain people. For example, if you were trying to really prove that people were, you had psychic powers, you would drop most of your jokes because someone who's trying to read minds doesn't crack jokes the whole time. And which of course
is ridiculous, because why would mind reading suddenly remove any sense of humor from somebody?
Yes, exactly. This is the idea that nonsense, an audience have about a mind reader and what they should and shouldn't be. Exactly. Yeah. A great example that always springs to mind for me is and I'll put a link on at conman.com.au so people can watch it, is one of the early Derren Brown series where he got the actor Simon Pegg in. And he said to him, he got him beforehand to write down, what would you like for your birthday? And he said, you wanted a red BMX bike. And he opens up this present and it's a red BMX bike. And Simon Pegg is gobsmacked. And then Derren Brown says, well, there's no way I could possibly have known that. And it's actually what I did was I changed your mind. You actually wanted a leather jacket, but I changed your mind to make you think that you wanted a red BMX bike. And he opens up the envelope, and inside, in Simon Pegg's handwriting, it says leather jacket.
Very similar in a way to his advertising campaign.
Yes, exactly. That's right. Yeah. He says the very honest statement that I cannot read your mind. There's no way I can. So instead, what I'm going to do is this sneaky method of subliminally affecting your decisions. When you and I both know that he didn't do that either, he did another third sneaky, even sneakier method. It's that type of performance that is very difficult for lay people to separate what is real and what is not.
And I'm sure Darren has been approached by advertising agencies all over the world who've said, will you work for us and, you know, will you help us with this, that and the other? I'm sure it happens, but Darren is smart enough not to get involved in that, I would imagine. But
what is the difference between him doing that and Uri Geller having the same thing of saying, look, I can bend spoons, and then he gets approached by mining companies saying, can you tell us where, you know, you can control metal, where is the best place for us to dig our mines? Like, what is the difference between those two?
I think the only difference is he's making a definite claim without any... Darren has just been a little bit vaguer. And also not then taking money for really doing what he's claimed the method is. I think if Darren suddenly worked for advertising companies, you know, using fake subliminal messaging to try and help them, I think he'd have overstepped the line. But, you know, I still find it, you know, I still find what Darren does slightly awkward. I mean, he uses the disclaimer now, which I think is better than his earlier ones. But I mean, when I go and see Darren live, I don't feel like, I don't come away thinking there is, and again, I'm a magician, so it's very hard to say it, but I don't come away thinking he's genuinely using any of these real powers. I do feel like he's playing a game with the audience, and the audience is sort of in on the game. But I'm a magician, so I may be totally wrong on that. You know, I've never really chatted to enough lay people who, you know, and said, do you really think... And I suppose there are some who think he's using these techniques that he says he's using.
Yeah.
And he's sort of, in a very gentle way, he's using some of the techniques. But like you say, it's 2% of the 100%, and 98 is more magic related.
Yeah. What do you think of there was a recent performance on, I think it was America's Got Talent, of Colin McLeod, who's American...
Colin Cloud, who's
a mentalist, and he calls himself basically a modern Sherlock Holmes. So he uses the powers of deduction, seems to be the
piece. Yeah.
So he's not using psychology, he's using deduction. And he performed a guess which hand the coin is in routine, and it was a whole lot of stuff to do with lies and, you know, body language to tell where these coins were. And it was very, very believable. It really appeared as if he really was.
It is very believable. And it's a beautiful routine as well. Mm. It's cleverly structured and it's cleverly worked out. Colin's a good friend of mine and I love what he does, but I still feel awkward about his claim. And I wonder whether when you start making claims like that, that, you know, I can look at somebody and just by looking at them, tell what they do for a living. I think you're putting yourself at a big risk that people are going to try and call you out on that. They're going to try and, you know, investigate and say, well, can he, and speak to the people afterwards. And we know that, you know, if you speak to enough people and talk to enough people, you'll be able to, they'll be able to work out what he's doing. And I think if you just say, what I'm doing is a trick, I'm going to do a trick. It's, you know, you'll love it. It's based on this. It's whatever. Let's try it. Don't even make a claim, but just say it is what it is. I think you're less likely for people to try and work out what you're doing because they've got nothing to investigate. you've sort of told them it is what it is. So they've got nothing to try and bust you on.
Yeah.
So I think it's a bit risky. I mean, I could be wrong, but, you know, I just think it could come a time for Colin when suddenly it's like, well, and I don't want to say what method, but, you know, he did this and he did this and, you know, suddenly it's out that he wasn't doing exactly what he said he was doing.
Yeah.
But if he didn't make those claims, I think it would be less likely that that would happen, less likely that they'll want to call him on it.
And there is also the idea of if the audience calls you on it, like you have performers who go on these shows and the YouTube comments, there are people who go, oh, he did this, and they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And the moment of figuring out is a moment of pride for the person who figured it out. But in the case of what something like what he did is that the audience is exposing them as a fraud. They're exposing them as someone who is lying and, you know, who's saying they're doing one thing and they're actually doing another. And for me, I've established just a litmus test in my head of if the audience ever figured out exactly how I'm doing what I'm doing, what would their opinion of me be? Would they feel like I was, you know, a jerk, or would they feel like I was emotionally manipulative, or would they just feel like I was clever?
Penn said along the lines of, you know, people who are making strange claims, that if they don't believe that we're doing what we say we're doing, then we're insulting their intelligence. And if they do believe what we're telling them, then we are conning them. So, you know, it's sort of whichever way they go, it's not a good scenario. And I sort of agree with that. I don't want audiences to leave my show believing or having their worldview of what's possible physically changed. I don't want them to go away now believing a lie is possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. But it's awkward because, you know, for some mentalism, the whole performance relies a little bit on believability. It, you know, like I say, with mine, it doesn't. And I suppose finding a way of performing it, I suppose that's why disclaimers are sometimes useful.
Mm.
Although most mentalists don't actually like disclaimers because they, you know, they do steal that. I don't think if you perform in a honest way and it's clear that what you're doing, then you don't need a disclaimer necessarily.
Yeah, and you also, I guess you also need to accept that there are idiots in the world, though. There are always going to be a percentage of the audience who will watch you regardless of what you perform and how you perform it. Who, if you just hint at even the theme of mind reading, you know, there are people who think the movie Paranormal Activity is real.
You can't really factor those people in. You've got to perform, you know, with a reasonably intelligent mindset in, you know, in your head of who you're performing to. You can never factor in the people who are, you know, going to claim that. I mean, it's like who was it with Houdini? Arthur Conan Doyle, you know, adamant that Houdini, you know, disappeared and transposed himself from one box to another, and he was using his spiritual ways of doing it. And even though Houdini said, no, I'm doing this, and virtually told him the methods, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was so much into the spiritual world that he wouldn't believe Houdini. So you're always going to get some people like that who, you know, are just going to believe what they're going to believe.
Yeah. It is that, just, I guess, that idea, though, of are you making the audience smarter or dumber from having watched your show? You know, are they, you know, or are they just the same? And I think my audiences to be either just the same or a little bit smarter from having watched me rather than dumber. But then saying that, I have done, I mean, like this, the lie detector, the idea of a lie detector routine, which is a common theme in mentalism, which is basically the audience tell lies and the magician / mentalist tells if they're telling the truth or not. I've done those routines and I have had audience believe that I really have the ability to tell who's lying and who's telling the truth. And for a long time, I justified it to myself by saying, well, I'm using actual science. So I'm using the actual science that it has been done into lie detection and into, you know, how to tell if, you know, body language and how to tell if they're telling the truth or not. But I decided that it wasn't really cool when I figured out, one, a lot of the science is actually bogus, that there, you know, there is no way, there's no Pinocchio's nose, is this the thing Paul Ekman says, there's no way of telling if someone is lying or telling the truth with any certainty. A lot of that science
even lie detectors aren't certain. So.
No, that's right. Yeah, they're you know, truth theorems, the whole lot, none of them really like work with any real certainty. But also, I was, even if all of those claims were true, I was exaggerating them. I was, you know, those techniques would be used in an interrogation over hours and hours and hours, and you would notice the tells over and over and over again, and that would point you in the right direction and where to interrogate them next. Whereas what I'm saying is, you know, you looked up and to the left, therefore you're holding a black marble, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, you know.
But you know what? There are... I mean, that's sort of, that's one way of going, but there are fun ways of just doing a lie detecting type routine where you're not, you know, it's nonsense what you're doing,
yeah,
but still fun and entertaining, and they don't know what the what's going on or what your method is, or you know, I think that there are a thousand ways that you can, that are obviously more ridiculous and unbelievable and definitely not true, but entertaining, where you can, you know, and you can almost ridicule the whole thing, and it becomes fun. So again, I think we go for those presentations purely because we want believability. And I don't necessarily think you need to have believability. I mean, I love, you know, I keep going back to Penn and Teller, but I just like their approach to being honest about it. So when he's doing the nail gun, you know, and he, you know, he's firing it at his crotch and things, and going, it's a trick, you know, I'm not in danger. It's a, you know, and yet people still are, you know, worried about it, and you know, it just looks real, and yet he's telling the exact opposite. And in theory, that should ruin the trick, but it doesn't ruin the trick. It's, you know, it's great fun.
Yeah.
And when you know they do the bullet catch, they never sort of say, you know, they never say they're going to do what you think they've done. You know, say we're going to pass one bullet from here to here, and so I think sometimes it's just laziness. I think I'm not getting to you that because I've done it myself as well, and you know, I still have routines now that I do, and I sort of think I'm slightly misleading the audience more than I want to here.
Yeah.
Does
it requires though a lot of self awareness and a lot of self interrogation to you know, like when creating a routine, to actually decide whether or not what you're doing is honest or not. And because you are lying, you know, you have to lie to be a magician. But it requires a lot of self-awareness that I think a lot of magicians and a lot of people, we just don't have. You know, if we, like the idea of saying to someone, I want you to get up on stage and lie, but I want you to tell the right sort of lie, you know, an ethical lie, is a difficult thing to do, particularly if it's a routine that you've, you know, practiced for years and years.
Well, Jeffrey Durham, you know, I've heard you speak about Jeffrey Durham, so I know you know him. Was it his book you were talking about? Maybe I've got this wrong. Jeffrey Durham. You've glazed over. You maybe don't know him. No, he's a UK magician anyway. Sort of an old, I say older guy. He's not that old really, but he's older than me, so that's older. But he had sort of a theory that he would never lie to the audience, and he'd do routines where he just didn't tell. He'd tell them what was going on, and just the things that he didn't want them to know, he just wouldn't say.
Yeah.
So, you know, so if he was giving them a deck of cards, and for example, it wasn't a genuine deck of cards, rather than saying, check it's a genuine deck of cards, when there was maybe something wrong with it, he wouldn't do that. He'd just say, here's a deck of cards. Have a look at them. But, and it's amazing how few lies you do have to tell in a routine if you don't want to. A lot of times we tell the lies to, you know, to reinforce the trick.
But yeah,
sometimes you don't have to tell the lies. You can just do the effect, and omit the information that you don't need them to know, rather than tell a lie about it.
Yeah, and I think that often makes the routine stronger because you have less things to hide. You know, that's always the thing we're told, of never say I have a perfectly ordinary deck of cards, because that's a claim that people can argue. You say I have a deck of cards, and that is the truth. Isn't Jeffrey Durham the multi-millionaire American ventriloquist?
No, that's Jeff Dunham.
Oh, Dunham. Okay.
Dunham. Yeah. No, this is Jeffrey Durham. He used to be the great Soprendo in the UK and sort of did kids' magic, and then he's done corporate stuff, and now he does a lot of consulting. He's a fantastic, fantastic performer, sort of very gentle approach. And he doesn't do, really, he does more magic than mentalism. It's nearly all classic magic he does. But he wrote a great book, which will be on my shelf somewhere. I won't go find it now. With just of all his routines he's performed, and they're just fabulously just described in every detail why he's worked them out. And Yeah, but he had this sort of thing of not lying, you know, not wanting to tell lies to the audience. And I do tell lies to my audience in the process of tricks. Not often, but I do it. But one thing I do to try and temper that is I try and put a lot of truth into my routines as well. So I will try and, you know, if I'm telling a story about why I'm doing something, it'll normally be a true story. Or it'll be a completely fabricated story and they'll be aware of it.
Yeah.
So I do a card coincidence trick, which is based on the Laura Buxton coincidence, you know, the Laura Buxton, the red balloon.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a great routine.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, that is a whole true story. I twist it at the end. And even at the end, I say, it's all true. That whole story is true. You can Google it if you don't believe me. It's in the Guinness Book of World Records, Ripley's Believe It or Not. And when I heard the story, I was so amazed. I thought, I'm going to call Laura Buxton up. And then I pause and I look at the audience. I say, this is all lies from now on.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I just carry on with the story. But it's a lovely little moment of just admitting to the audience that the whole routine is based on truth, but there's some lies within it.
Yeah.
And it always gets like a lovely little sort of, not a belly laugh, but it gets like those wry smiles of everybody realizing what's going on, you know.
Yeah. I often have the opposite problem in that I will tell a true story, and there's a point to the true story and there's a moral that I want them to take away, or a lesson, mm-hmm. or something they can actually gain from it. And like, for example, I talk about this a lot because I just love talking about it. I talk about John of God, who's the Brazilian faith healer who jams things up people's noses to cure them.
Right.
And I talk about how he is a con artist, and I explain the placebo effect. And then to demonstrate it, I perform the human blockhead by hammering a nail into my head. And the audience will often, they will come up afterwards and say, I have no idea how you did that nail in the head trick. And I have to stop. No, I really hammered a nail into my head. This is what the real guy does. He uses medical forceps, but this is what the real guy does. And you can look it up. And they go, no, but how did you do it? Is it like a bendy nail or retractable? No, it's a real nail. I can do it again. You know, and you then, because you set yourself up as someone who's going to lie, they don't believe, you know, it's a kind of Cassandra syndrome, and they don't believe anything you have to say. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Whereas I guess for mentalists, they're trying to lay it, you know, they don't want to see that doubt, because, okay, with your routines, if I know you're not magic, but they are still entertaining. But if I know that with a lot of mentalism, it involves something like, okay, four people come up on the stage now. You stand here and you stand here now. Here's an envelope and here's a piece of paper. Now draw a picture of something. Now put in the envelope. Now mix up the envelopes. Now I'm going to look at the drawing. And I'm going to look at your body language. And now, oh, I'm guessing based on, you know, it goes on. And you're like 15 minutes in and nothing has happened. And eventually they figure out who drew what drawing based on their body language or whatever it is. That goes on for 15, 20 minutes because of all these steps and all this stuff to make it more believable. That if I get bored because I know that there is a trick and it has nothing to do with body language, and I know that it is, you know. And so I think if the audience knows that they're watching a magic trick and they're watching something fake, then it's not engaging a lot of the time. It's dull to watch mentalism and not think that it's real. Is that something you have noticed as well?
Yeah, I mean,
without naming names.
Maybe that's why mentalists do this thing of trying to make it real, is because actually mentalism is inherently process. And if all you're doing is process, that can be very, very dull. So to make that process believable suddenly makes it intriguing. That you're not just like, oh, there's this process going through, but hang on a minute, I want to watch and see if I can do this. Whereas if you can make the process fun and entertaining, it doesn't really matter what you're doing. I mean, that trick you were talking about, which is effectively sneak thief, people will probably Google that, shouldn't have said. But It's not called sneak thief.
No.
But that effect of, you know, drawing pictures and then revealing them by body language, I've just started on a routine based on that trick, but just they write a word on a business card. And I worked the word out. And I just started off by saying, I love that word association game. Have you ever played it? You know, you say one word, they say another. I say, it's really interesting. We're going to play a little game, but I want some words to start with. And I asked them to, take, you know, there's a jar full of business cards. Take a business card, grab a pen, write a word on it. Somebody collects them. One's placed in an envelope, put aside, and the other three I look at. And then I just play a word association game with them. And I'm ad-libbing comedy with what happens with that. And now and again, I'll say something like, I'll go cat, they go dog, I go fisherman, they go friend, I go loophole, they go dog. I go, ah, that's interesting. And then I'll go the next one. Now there's nothing going on. I'm not claiming to be able to do anything. I'm just playing a game of word association, and then every now and again going, ah. And so and then I sort of say, yeah, this is dog, you wrote dog, didn't you? And you know, whatever. And then the third one, of course, is we'll play word association, but I'm not even gonna look at your card, I'll try and work out what you might have written. Play word association again. And I will at some point mention the word that I know they've written in the thing, and then pass it, and then backtrack, try and get to it. But I'm not making any claims of body language or mind reading. It's just a fun process. But I think if you haven't got a fun process, then you've got a process that needs to be made interesting the other way, and the only other way is, as I said, make it fake, believable, and intriguing.
Yeah. Have you ever got into an argument with a mentalist, another mentalist, or someone who you felt has really overstepped the line? Is that something like? Are you someone who you don't strike me as someone who's who would step up and?
I've not had arguments. No, I've had strong conversations with people, and.
Sounds like you beat him up in a car park.
No.
Had a strong conversation outside.
Well, conversations where we've slightly disagreed on things with people, and of course, I'm also willing to accept that it's an opinion. It's not a right or wrong thing particularly. Although the danger is if I say no, it's definitely wrong, and they say no, it's definitely not wrong, then suddenly it is black and white, I suppose. But I've had discussions with it. I've had discussions with Luke Jermaine about I mean, he's fantastic. He does amazing stuff. He did a great, I saw him do an amazing Q&A thing, and you could have been watching a genuine psychic with the stuff he was doing. And he doesn't make any claims, but it's some of the stuff he's doing is so strong that there's almost nothing. You can think other than he's doing what he's doing. He's in touch with these people and knows about them and everything else. And he knows, I've told him, that I feel a little bit awkward about that sometimes when you start speaking into people's lives, because even though they may, you may not have set it up as real, and I can't remember whether, I don't think he ever does disclaimers, Luke. I could be wrong. But it just worries me slightly that they might think, well, the next step is I want to go and see somebody else who can do this. And instead of going to see a magician, they go and see a medium who can effectively use the same techniques and do the same sort of thing. And it's awkward. It's awkward when you've got people you like and respect, but you don't, you have a differing opinion on these things. I know, Penn and Teller and have I mentioned them? Penn and Teller and David Blaine, strongly disagree on stuff, but they still get on. So it's a conversation we should be able to have and disagree on without falling out over. But I think it is an important thing to at least think about why we do things and how we do things. Even if you decide, right, I'm going to take the dark side. I was reading a thing. Because I knew we were going to be talking about this, I went on the Magic Cafe to see what people were saying about disclaimers. And there was a thread on there about disclaimers, do you need to use them, whatever. And the general consensus, they were all mentalists, was no, you don't need to use disclaimers, just, let them think what they think. And then one guy said, well, when I'm doing psychic readings, I never have any disclaimers. And he's basically a mentalist who went out and did psychic readings. Mm. But then he went and did mentalism shows as well. And I just thought, you know, I just thought, how can you do that? I don't know. Just, you know.
Yeah, and it's something that we've talked about. There's a few guys around Melbourne who do exactly that, who are mentalists, trained in the art of faking psychic powers, and then go out and do real, you know, psychic readings and at the very least kind of promote the idea of themselves as being truly psychic. I think then that is when you cross over from being a shades of grey into just being a con artist.
Yeah, but also I think it's almost a natural progression. If you start setting yourself up as real, you start being vague about how you do it.
Mm.
You don't use disclaimers. Then all of a sudden people start to believe it. You know.
It's a slippery slope. It's going to be long
before somebody with a lot of money says, you know, I'll give you $1,000. Will you come and give me a private reading for 15 minutes? And suddenly it's like, well, it's hardly a step away from what I'm already doing. You know.
Yeah.
So maybe that's another reason to sort of try and keep a clear, you know, line between the two somehow.
Even if that clear line is not in the audience's head, because who knows what they're thinking, it should be in your head about who you are and what you're about. And
I think so, yeah.
And what you believe and what where your values are. Gosh, I never thought I would have such strong thoughts and opinions about something as ultimately silly as magic tricks.
Yeah.
Just before I leave you, obviously, if people want to see you, I think the best example of your work is when you were on Penn & Teller's Fool Us, in the British series of that. So I'll put a link up to that performance.
Yeah, put a link up. I mean, it's not my best performance. I'm pretty nervous on that. But, but you know, I watch it and go, oh, dear me, John, you were nervous. But yeah, I mean, also there's... there's stuff on my website. You can put my website up if people want to go. There's links on there to various videos and showreels of me performing stuff. That'll give them an idea.
Correct. Who else? Sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say it might be a good idea that they don't look at them until after they've listened to this. Otherwise, they'll think, oh, I'm not going to sit and listen to his views on mentalism for the next hour.
Is he going to bring out a ukulele and start playing that?
Exactly.
Excellent. And who else do you recommend people check out? Obviously, Penn & Teller. Clearly, who are some other great mentalists that you enjoy that you think people should watch?
I think Darren Brown.
Yeah.
In my opinion, he's the best out there.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly Darren. Luke Jermaine is in the UK is probably in the world. He's probably, you know, just what he does. He's brilliant. Who else? Michael Weber, although he doesn't perform a lot. You know, for lay people, I'm not sure if there's a lot of video out of him doing stuff.
He's amazing. But
Michael Weber's got some amazing stuff. Max Maven's an interesting example because he's got this look of almost, you know, the look of a slightly demonic mind reading. You know, he's got that classical mind reader look, hasn't he?
Yeah.
With a widow's peak and the dark eyes and the, you know. But then he tempers it all with this lovely comedy that makes you think, well, he's it's all a bit tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
And I don't think people ever go away thinking, you know, he's that real. But I think maybe they do. I could be wrong. I'm sure some people do. That's a bit unfair. But I think that's not really what it's about with him. What it's about is they do have a great time watching him. So he's very good. Lots and lots of great mind readers.
Excellent. We will put some links on the website. Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming on Scammapalooza, and thank you for listening to Scammapalooza as well.
Yeah, no, I'll be listening to this one just to make sure I said everything right.
This has been Scammapalooza. For more information on the show, check out conman.com.au, and hope to all see you all at the Melbourne Magic Festival.